Right now, Wisconsin's bat population is under threat from white nose syndrome. New research from the State Department of Natural Resources found that in some caves, it killed up to 60% of hibernating bats this winter. Scientists are trying to find out more about why some bats survive the disease and if there's a way to slow the spread. Dave Bleihert is with us from the U.S. Geological Survey's National Wildlife Health Center. Kate Archer-Kent talked with him last week.
The DNR said in its most recent survey of bat hibernation sites in Wisconsin that the death toll from white nose syndrome is catastrophic. What is this disease and how deadly is it to our cave-dwelling bats here in Wisconsin?
The disease is caused by a fungus. The fungus's name is Pseudogymnoascus destructans. I know that's a mouthful.
Yeah.
Our thought is that the fungus, or evidence suggests that the fungus was introduced to North America from Eurasia, where it's likely existed for a long time. Hibernating bat species of North America were previously naive to the fungus, and it's proven to be quite a deadly pathogen. The disease first emerged in the northeastern United States, in New York, and has since spread extensively throughout the eastern half of the country, with an unexpected jump last year, about 1 year ago, to Washington State. And unfortunately, we've seen that once the disease or the fungus enters a susceptible hibernating bat population, it can exert initial mortality up to 100% of that colony.
What is the status of our bat population here in Wisconsin?
So the disease was first detected a couple of years ago in Wisconsin, and initially we can find, when we monitor for disease at the leading edge of the region where the disease is known to exist, first we'll find low levels of the pathogenic fungus in bats. Then the next year we'll start to see signs of disease in bats and low-level mortality. And our thought is that as the fungus has several years to amplify in bats and in their hibernation sites, it reaches levels that it then becomes quite lethal in subsequent years. And that's what we're unfortunately seeing now in the state of Wisconsin.
How exactly does this spread from bat to bat?
So the fungus propagates on the skin of bats, and it can spread from bats just through simple contact among the animals. And when they hibernate, they're quite gregarious. They form large clusters of hibernating animals. Hibernation is interspersed with brief periods where the bats arouse and come out of hibernation, and during those times they move about and have contact with other animals. So it's really a nightmare scenario where you've got high density of susceptible hosts in confined environments conducive to amplification of the pathogen with ready transmission among those animals.
Has this white nose syndrome spread to other populations? Has it threatened other animal populations?
To date, we've only seen manifestation of disease in hibernating bats. The fungus has some very interesting properties. For example, it's what we call a psychrophile. It can only grow in the cold. So bats are mammals like you and I, and during the spring, fall, and summer, when they're metabolically active and flying around in the night skies eating insects, they have uniformly warm bodies, just like us or our pet dog, our pet cat. When they go into hibernation, they retreat into caves for a period of dormancy. These caves are about the temperature of the inside of a refrigerator, and this fungus can only grow in the cold. The fungus, if you were to put it on the desktop in front of me right now in my office, which I would never do because that would be a breach of biosecurity, it can't grow. It's too warm at 70 degrees Fahrenheit for this fungus to grow. And so its growth and infectious nature is confined to these cold hibernation sites into which bats retreat when they hibernate. And part of the unique physiology of these animals is when they go into this period of winter dormancy, they actually drop their body temperature to something similar to the inside of your refrigerator. And it's that unique metabolic physiologic capability of these animals to reduce their body temperature to conserve energy and effectively go into this state of torpor for the winter that makes them susceptible to the fungus. In effect, it's not unlike that tub of cottage cheese that you may have forgotten in the back of your refrigerator and it gets moldy, because mold spores are ubiquitous in our environment. And unfortunately, this new fungus, Pseudogymnoascus destructans is now one of the airborne mold spores that bats need to now deal with in their hibernation sites.
This fungus then covers the bat's eyes, it covers their nose. What does it look like and feel like? And what is this fungus actually doing to the bat?
So the disease is called white nose syndrome because in many cases we see the fungus growing on the muzzle or the nose of the bats. But the primary site of infection turns out to be their wings. Their wings are unfurred skin. Their bat wings are a very unique organ in that they're exquisitely delicate and complicated. The skin that comprises the wing of a bat comprises up to 85% of the skin area on that entire animal. And in addition to these wings conferring the unique ability among mammals of flight to bats, they're the only mammals that can fly. It's a very sensitive membrane, and so it represents a very large surface area. When these bats are hibernating and not otherwise eating or drinking, intact wing membrane is critical so that they don't, for example, lose water through their wing membrane at a time of year when they're not drinking. And this fungus is disrupting the integrity of that wing membrane. You can imagine that this wing membrane is highly vascularized, has a lot of blood vessels in it, in order to keep it perfused with oxygen and viable during that 6 months of the year when the bats are hibernating and their heart rates are greatly reduced. So essentially the fungus is disrupting water balance, circulation, blood pH, many physiological factors that we think are mediated through normal healthy function of all of the various physiology that needs to be coordinated through this wing.
So the bat is waking up a lot during hibernation?
That's one of the effects. We've seen that infected bats have increased energy consumption. The fungal infection can drive the bat out of hibernation more frequently than normal, resulting in increased energy usage. The fungus, for reasons we don't necessarily understand, induces odd or unusual abnormal behaviors in the bats, causing them sometimes to exit their hibernacula, their hibernation sites in large numbers during the wintertime when there are no insects on the landscape for them to eat. Correct. And adverse weather conditions that they're not evolved to survive. So we see bats dying of exposure on the landscape in the wintertime.
We're talking right now with David Bleihert. He is the chief of the Wildlife Disease Diagnostic Laboratories branch of the U.S. Geological Survey's National Wildlife Health Center. We're talking about white nose syndrome, a disease that's killed off millions of bats in North America in recent years and really decimating populations, hitting hard now here in Wisconsin. David, where are you seeing this white nose syndrome have the most devastating effects here in Wisconsin?
So effectively we see the disease behave similarly in sites that harbor hibernating bats with conditions appropriate to propagation of the fungus. I would say the simplest answer to that question is any site that's been infected with the fungus for a couple of years that has conducive conditions, which is essentially, unfortunately, all of them, we are seeing consistently severe impacts.
In particular counties? Or you don't break it down that way?
I don't have that information in front of me to break that down that specifically right now.
Sure. So, if we see such a decrease in the bat population, how would it affect us? Why are bats our friends?
Right. So bats are voracious predators of insects. Those insects include mosquitoes. They include plant pests like moths. They include forest pests, also different moths that consume plant tissues. So different modeling studies, for example, have shown that the insects consumed by bats confer billions of dollars a year in pesticides value that farmers don't otherwise have to apply because those insect populations are being kept in check to a degree by bats.
Mm-hmm.
And that work has also been borne out by experimental work where they create large exclosures over cornfields, for example, that exclude bats, and then they can actually measure insect predation on those plants. And so that is one of the areas of concern, that loss of bat predation on insects could require increased use of pesticides that puts more chemicals in the environment as well as confers increased costs to agriculture.
The DNR has said that it's shifting the focus of its work to finding out why bats at some hibernation sites survive at higher rates than others. Do you have an idea about why that might be and whether this is a good shift to focus on in this research to how to combat this syndrome?
Yeah, that is a very interesting point. We have seen some sites in the Northeast where there are remnant surviving populations. Hopefully from the perspective that it's not all doom and gloom, we've also seen, now that disease has been in the northeastern United States for about a decade, we have seen signs of recovery among some populations. We know that cave hibernating bats do persist across Europe, where the function or where the fungus has presumably been for many, many, many years. So it is likely that these populations will naturally develop some form of resistance to the fungus.
And David, what can we do here on the home front to help stop the spread of white nose syndrome or help the bat population recover? What can we do here in Wisconsin?
Right. One of the biggest challenges to managing this disease is that in addition to the spread of the fungus from bat to bat, the fungus also establishes reservoirs in suitable environments, like in soil of hibernation sites like caves. So in addition to probably the primary means by which the fungus is spread, bat-to-bat interactions, humans moving from one cave to another have the potential to also move infectious spores of the fungus. And that may not be such a big deal within a defined local area where bats are already moving the fungus, but it does become a big deal if that human-mediated movement is, for example, from Europe to the United States, mm-hmm. likely the means by which this disease was introduced to this country, or from somewhere in the eastern United States to near Seattle, Washington, as happened last year. And so people should be cautious, especially if they enter cave sites, to follow guidelines put out by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service and the State Department of Natural Resources to avoid inadvertently moving the pathogen. Additionally, anything that we can do to support bat habitat and bat conservation, whereas it may not directly be addressing the specific impacts of white nose syndrome, it is still supportive to bat populations in general that need all the help they can get right now.
Well, David, thank you so much for explaining this and being with us today.
Sure. Thank you.
That was David Blehert of the U.S. Geological Survey's National Wildlife Health Center talking about white nose syndrome and Wisconsin's bats population.